Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayigash. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Vayigash. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayigash. The central topic of the parsha is the dramatic reunion between Joseph and his brothers. When Joseph reveals himself and brings about a reconciliation with his brothers, when Joseph tells his brothers, God has sent me on a mission to save you during this time of famine, so please go back to the land of Israel. Tell my father that I am still alive and help him bring his family down to Egypt so that I can provide for all of you during a time of famine. When the brothers come back to Jacob and tell him everything that has happened and somehow prove to him that Joseph is still alive, what is Jacob's response? If we look at chapter 45, verse 27, the end of the verse says, Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem, the spirit of Jacob their father came alive. And then in the next verse, and Israel said, much, Joseph my son is still alive. I will go, I will see him before I die. These two verses are very, very dramatic, especially the shift between Jacob and Israel. And we know from previous podcasts, Jacob is the name of the one who was holding on, the one who was trying to come up from behind, the one who was trying to survive, the one who was always anxious of perishing. And Israel is the one who is able to fight in triumph, the one who is able to take control of his destiny. For the 22 years that Joseph was separated from his father, Jacob's life came to a standstill. His whole world fell apart. Jacob, who perhaps even felt guilty for having created this tension, hostility between Joseph and his brothers, which may have led to the death of Joseph. The Jacob who not only is mourning for the death of his son, but may also be suspicious that the brothers were the ones who brought this about. The Jacob who then experiences the brothers coming back, telling him of an Egyptian lord who took Shimon as a hostage to guarantee that they would bring Benjamin back. The Jacob who ultimately has no choice because the famine is so severe that he needs to allow the brothers to take Benjamin. And at that moment it seems that his whole life's work, which is the creation of this family, is now about to totally unravel. And yet all of a sudden there is this dramatic turnabout. Not only do Shimon and Benjamin come back, but all of a sudden he is told that Joseph is alive, not only alive, but in a position to now provide for the family during a time of famine. We can only imagine the tremendous sense of joy and relief that Jacob is feeling, and the tremendous desire to see his beloved son Joseph. And therefore Jacob becomes Israel, and Jacob takes control of his destiny and says, I must go down to Egypt. I must see my son Joseph before I die. And now let us look at the next verses. Chapter 46, verse 1. And Israel and all that he had traveled, and he comes to Beersheba, and he brings offerings to the God of his father Isaac. And then God says to Israel, in a vision at night, Jacob, Jacob. And he says, I am here. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father. Do not be afraid of going down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation. And verse 4, I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will bring you up, surely bring you up. And Joseph will place his hand on your eyes. Why does Jacob see fit to make a stop off on the way down to Egypt in Beersheba? Why does he bring offerings to the God of his father Isaac? Why does God speak to Israel and yet call him Jacob, Jacob, twice? And last but not least, why does God tell him, do not be afraid of going down to Egypt? We know from other examples in the Tanakh that when God appears to someone and says, don't be afraid, that is addressing a real concern which the person has. Which means that Jacob evidently is afraid. And perhaps that is the reason why he's stopping off in Beersheba. That is the reason why he's bringing the offerings. And perhaps that is the reason why he anticipates and is hoping that God will appear to him. But what is Jacob afraid of? The first thing perhaps that we should note is that Jacob is anxious about leaving the land of Israel. His father Isaac, in a similar situation, during a time of famine, had thought of leaving the land of Israel to go to Egypt. And God appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land of Israel, because this is the land of your destiny. The Jacob that is so anxious to go down to Egypt to see his beloved son Joseph is also very anxious about leaving the land of Israel and seeks out an answer from God. He goes to Beersheba. For Jacob, Beersheba is the symbol of God's revelation to his father of everything which the land of Israel represents to his father. The symbol of making a desert bloom, the glory of the land of Israel. And in this place, Jacob would like to seek out the counsel of God. And God comes to Jacob and tells him, go down to Egypt. Don't be afraid. You will go down, but you will also come back. Let me add that it is not only leaving the land of Israel which concerns Jacob, but Jacob is also aware of what God said to Abraham in the covenant of the parts, a section that we've discussed in other podcasts. This is Bereshit, chapter 15, and in particular, verse 13. Abraham falls into a deep sleep, at which point God says to him, you shall surely know that your seed will be strangers in a land which is not theirs. They will be enslaved and afflicted for 400 years. And then in verse 16, God says, and the fourth generation will come back. Jacob is aware of this covenant, of this decree. And hence Jacob is very concerned that when he now goes down to Egypt, he is setting in motion this decree. And if I were to stop here, which is what some commentaries say, what Jacob is afraid of is the impending enslavement and affliction of the Jewish people, which he knows will happen before the Jewish people can come back and take possession of the land of Israel. And when God assures them and says, don't worry, they will become a great nation there, and they will surely come back. I would like to now bring you a comment made by the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who is the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, in Russia, in the late 1800s, the teacher of Rav Kook. And he says the following on the verse where God says, do not be afraid. Quote, because Jacob was afraid that his children should not sink in the assimilation with the Egyptian nation. Because only in the land of Israel can the unique Jewish element be preserved from generation to generation, which is not the case in Egypt, because it is possible that the eye of Israel could sink, drown, be lost, the last words being mine. According to the Netziv, Jacob is not afraid of the affliction of the enslavement. Jacob is afraid of assimilation. He's not afraid of what the Egyptians will do to the Jewish people. He's afraid of what the Jews will do to themselves, where they will now embrace becoming part of Egypt, will reject the land of Israel. When the family comes down to Egypt, Joseph prompts the brothers what to say to Pharaoh in their audience with him. And this is chapter 46, verse 34. Joseph tells them, tell Pharaoh that you are herdsmen from your youth to the very day. Not only you, but your forefathers, so that you will settle in the land of Goshen, because all shepherds are an abomination to Egypt. Joseph tells them, tell Pharaoh what your profession is. Not to say that you're shepherds, herdsmen, which is more respectable, but nevertheless, herdsmen as opposed to people of the land, people who are engaged in agriculture, because evidently the Egyptians see it as an abomination to be shepherds, because the Egyptians are an agrarian society who are very much rooted and connected to the land. What is Joseph's goal? And the Netziv is consistent when he says that Joseph's goal is to see to it that Jacob and his family will be kept separate. And by being separate, they will somehow be able to preserve their Jewish identity. We know that ultimately the brothers did settle, Jacob and his family settled in the land of Goshen. But ironically, let me point out, chapter 47, verse 11, it says, Joseph settled his father and his brothers. He gave them, and the word that's used is achuzah, a landhold in Egypt, in the best place of the land, in the land of Ramses. At the very moment when Joseph is taking away the land from everyone else, repopulating them, he is giving his family a landhold, an achuzah. And in fact, if we look at the very last verse, which is in the parsha, chapter 47, verse 27, it says, and Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. Vayeachazuba, they were grabbed by the land. Vayifru, vayirbuma, oh, they are fruitful and they multiply there. Ironically, by separating his family and putting them in the land of Goshen, Joseph also created a certain entrenchment, a certain bond with their new land. And it is not coincidental that the word which is used is achuzah, because this is the word which was used when Abraham purchased the cave of Machpelah to bury Sarah. This was the first foothold of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. And what's happened at the end of Parshat Vayigash is that the Jews have now found a new foothold, a new promised land. And if I peek ahead into next week's Parshah, This is why Jacob is so insistent on being buried in the land of Israel. Why Jacob is so insistent in reminding his children the achuzah, the foothold, the permanent place of residence is only the land of Israel. If we follow what the Netziv is saying, when Joseph and eventually his family go down to Egypt, they are struggling with the problem of assimilation. How can they survive? How can they maintain their culture, their destiny, and not be overwhelmed by all that is surrounding them? The Netziv was advocating they need to separate themselves, be not in the hub, somehow find a space where they are able to somehow maintain their own culture. Let me point out that this is Joseph's greatest challenge. And not only that, but before his family came down to Egypt, a single individual surrounded by a totally foreign culture, and yet nevertheless, he was able to preserve his belief in God, his lifestyle. Perhaps one of the most difficult moments of his life is the story of Mrs. Potiphar. Potiphar's wife, who propositions Joseph, who day in, day out is seducing him and looking for him to sleep with her. And there comes a moment of truth, and this is in chapter 39, verse 9, where Joseph says to her, I can't do this. I can't do it because it's a betrayal of your husband. It's a betrayal of my position. And ultimately, I will be sinning to God. There is a Midrashic comment which says that at the moment of truth, Joseph sees before his eyes the image of Jacob, his father, and it's that image which prevents him from crossing the line that would have created a serious break with his Jewish identity. The challenge of Joseph and his brothers is also at the heart of the Chanukah story. The struggle of the Maccabees was a fight against assimilation, was an attempt to maintain their Judaism, to not let it be defiled by the majority culture. The success of the Maccabees was contained in three elements. And I think this is something that we should ponder about in today's reality. The first, the Maccabees were a family, fought as a family, fought to preserve the family as the core of the Jewish people, what we would call the nuclear family. Joseph and his brothers, Jacob's whole life's work was to build a family. And with all the difficulties and with all the trials and tribulations, Jacob's family remained intact and ultimately became the core of what would then be the Jewish people a few generations after. But it's not only about a family being together. The thing that we celebrate on Chanukah is the miracle of the oil, the miracle of the menorah. We know from verses in Psalms that candles are a metaphor for the soul. Candle, kiner mitzvah, the Torah or, is a metaphor for the mitzvot, for the light of the Torah. The menorah is a symbol of living Torah, living Judaism. Chanukah means dedication. But what does it mean at its core? It means the functioning. In modern Hebrew, Chanukah is related to chinuch, which is education. But what is education? Education is not in books. Education is in things that happen. In having the books translated to action, to doing. The mitzvah on Chanukah is ner ish ubeito, a candle, each man per household. The lighting of the menorah is a symbol for the light of the home, for the education that's going on in the home. And once again, not just an education that is intellectual, but an education which is alive, which is filled with doing. And therefore, at the core of the Chanukah story, and I would add at the core of Joseph and his brothers, is the challenge of creating a vibrant family that lives Judaism, not in the Beit Knesset, but in the home, because that's the core. And then there is the third element. The Maccabees fought for the restoration of Jewish sovereignty. Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. And if I go by what the Netziv said in his commentary, when God said, don't be afraid, it may very well be that it is the land of Israel, being sovereign in the land of Israel, having control of our destiny in the land of Israel, being the majority culture in the land of Israel, which is where we can take what goes on in the family to a completely different level, where the coming together of many different families can then produce a nation, and where that nation can then reinforce everything which is going on in each family. So I leave us with the following thoughts, both in terms of Chanukah and the story of Joseph and his brothers. If we are to combat assimilation, if we are going to guarantee Jewish continuity, the place to begin is by creating Jewish families. Not just having Jews marry Jews, but beyond that, to create an environment which is Jewish, where everything that is done within the family breathes Judaism. And perhaps, if ultimately we want to see that continuing forever, then we need to be able to do that as the majority culture, to do that as a sovereign people in their own land. We who are so fortunate, who have merited to see Jewish sovereignty restored today to the land of Israel, should realize that this presents us with an unbelievable opportunity. And make no mistake about it, it is the state of Israel which is the symbol of Jewish continuity, which guarantees Jewish continuity. And with all the flaws and with all the things that we can correct, we have it within our power to shape that destiny and to make Judaism as vital as it can possibly be. This is our challenge. This is our mandate. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.